Today, we're closer to the second coming than we have ever been in human history. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light.
Despite the dangerous, often deadly threats posed by blizzards, hurricanes, tornadoes, you can be thankful for radar, satellites, and other technology that have revolutionized the way we prepare for disasters. But while experts can typically predict dangerous weather, no one can predict the hour of the Lord's return to Earth, and for many, that will be the ultimate disaster. What should that mean for you in practical terms, and how can you prepare for the Lord's return? John MacArthur addresses that today on Grace to You as he continues his series, Jesus is Coming. And now here's John with a lesson.
If you'll remember, as we began the study of chapter 24, we noted verse 3, the disciples gathered around Jesus on the Mount of Olives and they said, "When shall these things be, and what shall be the signs of the end of the age and of thy coming?" They wanted to know when also. When is it going to happen? When are you going to come in glory and reward the righteous and judge the wicked? When are you going to come and establish your kingdom? When is it going to happen? And what are the signs? Well, in verses 4 through 35, our Lord gave the signs, didn't He? He told them the signs. Now, beginning in verse 36, He answers the when question. The what question, He already answered, gave them the signs. Now it's the when question. When shall these things be, they said. His answer comes in verse 36. Look at it. But of that hour, but of that day and hour, knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, nor the Son, but my Father only. His answer about the when is nobody knows, but God alone. So it could come at any time, on any generation. Now, what is to be our response to the end of the age? First of all, we saw in our last study, alertness. Look at verse 37. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered into the ark. And knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. The first requirement is alertness. The second is readiness. Look at verse 43, and now we'll go on to what we didn't cover. But know this, or I think this, it could be in an imperative, it could be in an indicative. I like to think it's an indicative. That is, it states a fact. Comparing with verse 42, you do not know what hour your Lord does come, but you do know this. I mean, this is obvious. You do know this, that if, and it's if with a condition in the Greek that is contrary to fact, if and he doesn't, but if he did, if the householder had known in what watch, that is in what 3-hour period during the night, the Jews divided the night into 4 3-hour periods from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., 6 to 9, 9 to 12, 12 to 3, 3 to 6. He says, if a householder knew what hours in the middle of the night the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Literally, the Greek word for breaking in is digging through. They would dig through the mud walls or dig through the tile roof to get in and steal everything. So he says, you don't know when the Lord's coming, but you do know this. If a man knew when a thief was coming, if he knew in general, not the minute or even the hour, but if he just knew the general watch, if he knew the general time frame, he sure would be ready for him when he got there, right? He sure would. And that's what he's saying. That you do know. Any fool knows that if the robber's coming and you know he's coming, you're going to be ready for him when he gets there. The Lord's coming is often likened to the coming of a thief. And it would be good at this point to say that it is not because it is a criminal coming. The likening of the Lord's coming to a thief, which occurs here, 2 Peter 3:10, Revelation 3:3, Revelation 16:5, Luke 12, 35 to 40, which I'll show you in a moment. It also occurs in 1 Thessalonians 5, 2 and following. And those places where the Lord's coming is likened to a thief, it is not that Christ is like a thief. It is that Christ will come suddenly and unexpectedly, like a thief comes suddenly and unexpectedly. That's the only analogy. That's the only analogy. There's one other footnote that I might add to it. When a thief comes, he takes everything you have, and so will Christ when he comes and finds a man who's not ready for his coming. Everything that man has, he'll take, won't he? And it'll all be burned up. So in that sense, too, we might see Christ like the thief who comes and takes everything that man has, which he puts his faith in, which cannot stand the test of judgment. So his point in the analogy is simple. If a man knew a thief was coming, he'd be ready. And if you know Jesus is coming, you better be ready. You better be ready. You know he's coming. If a man knew a thief was coming, he'd get ready for the thief. Jesus is telling you, I'm coming. I'm coming. I remember a preacher was preaching on the second coming, and he was one of those guys who believed that you shouldn't have any notes. You ought to preach strictly off your head, and he forgot his point. All he could remember was, behold, I come quickly, behold, I come quickly. And it should have jogged his mind, so he said it about five times and nothing happened. The final time, he thought if I hit the pulpit real hard and say, behold, I come quickly, maybe something will jar loose and I'll remember. Instead, he knocked the pulpit over, fell in the lap of a lady in the first row. And he apologized. He said, why are you apologizing? You warned me eight times you were coming. So, she got the point. And if he says he's coming and says he's coming and says he's coming, then you can believe he's coming. And only a fool who has all that information isn't ready. That's his point. If you knew what period of time he was coming, if you knew what the signs were and you could see that, then you would be ready for that if you weren't a fool. Look at Luke 12 for just a moment and find the other passage where the Lord gives basically the same warning in a few different terms. And again, the Lord very often taught the same lessons using the same illustrations or very closely related ones. As any good teacher knows, you repeat good things and you repeat good illustrations in different settings because they're helpful to people. And the Lord here in Luke chapter 12 is also concerned in warning people about his second coming. He says, let your loins be girded about and your lamps burning, and you yourselves like men that wait for their Lord when he will return from the wedding, that when he comes and knocks, you may open unto him immediately. I mean, be ready so that when he comes back, everything is as it ought to be. Blessed are those servants whom the Lord, when he comes, shall find watching. Verily I say unto you, he shall gird himself and make them to sit down to eat, and will come forth and serve them. Amazing. When the Lord comes back, if you've been faithful, he'll sit you down to eat and he'll serve you. That's the kingdom. If you're prepared when he comes, you'll sit down with him in his kingdom and he will serve you. And if he should come in the second watch or come in the third watch and find them so, then blessed are those servants because they're ready whenever he comes. They know he's coming. They don't know when it is, but they're ready. And this know, that if the owner of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not permitted his house to be broken through. Be ye therefore ready also, for the Son of Man comes at an hour when you think not. Now you can go back to Matthew 24. It's the same idea. It's the same basic lesson. It's the same idea that he is given here, that when he comes is a devastating judgment. When he comes is an immediate glory for the redeemed. So be ready. And since we don't know when it is, and no one knows when it is, and no one can know when it is, we need to be ready at all times. At all times. So alertness and readiness. It's one thing to be alert and say, boy, I'll recognize the signs. It's something else to be ready. And readiness speaks of salvation, of a prepared heart. There's a third thing that's called for, not only alertness and readiness, but faithfulness. Notice verse 45 through 51. Faithfulness. And here again is a beautiful analogy, a story, a parable, if you will, which our Lord also uses in Luke 12 in another setting, because it illustrates so very, very clearly the point that he wants to make. It is a powerful, powerful illustration. Verse 45, who then is a faithful and phronimos, sensible, wise servant, whom his Lord has made ruler over his household to give them food in due season. Now, what is he talking about? Well, it's a very, very interesting parable. The Lord is like God. The servant is like every man and woman in the world. And every one of us has been given a stewardship. Every one of us has been given a responsibility. It's as if the Lord has said, all right, here, you manage life and breath and intellect and will and emotion and talent and truth and spiritual sensitivity and opportunity and privilege. All that I give you in creating you in my image, all that I give you in endowing your world with all the good things that I could possibly create, all that I give you in terms of opportunity to serve me, you're responsible for. Like a servant who is told to rule over the house, that is to manage all the goods and to make sure that he properly gives food to everybody in the right time in the right place. In other words, every person in the world, not just Christians, every single person in the world has been given a management test by God. Life, breath, privilege, all those things are granted to us by God, and they are a stewardship for which we are accountable. And hell will be populated not only by the devil and his angels, but by people who wasted that privilege, who embezzled God's substance like the man did in Matthew 18 and was called in to give an account for how it is that he could have embezzled the king's money and stood there bankrupt. And he fell on his face and pleaded for mercy. Every man, woman in the world has been given a stewardship by God. And if you embezzle God's goods and privileges and resources and opportunities, then you will be accountable to God for the wastefulness of your stewardship. And as I said, hell is going to be filled with people who used up God's opportunities for themselves, who abused their God-given privilege, and who failed and refused to serve God in the way that He commands. So every human being on the face of the earth is being tested by God as to the stewardship of what they possess. And so this householder does that with a servant. Verse 46 says, then blessed is the servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. Now when the Lord comes and finds servants doing what he wanted them to do, they're going to be blessed, aren't they? That indicates that they're believers. That indicates that they are the redeemed. They are obedient. Obedience is always the mark. Doing the will of God is always the mark of true salvation. So when the Lord comes, he'll find the true servant doing what he told them to do, fulfilling his will, living out their stewardship to the fullest. Verse 47, verily I say unto you, that he shall make him, that is that servant obeying, ruler over all his goods. That's marvelous. What that says is when the Lord comes back and finds his faithful servants, his trustworthy servants, his obedient servants, he is going to put them over everything he possesses. It's a marvelous thing. You know what we're going to do in the millennial kingdom and in eternity? We're going to sit with Christ on his throne. Revelation 3:21 says, as he is sitting with the Father on his throne, and we're going to rule over everything he possesses. That's verse 47. Life is a stewardship. What you do with this little slice of time will determine whether or not you will rule in eternity in the throne of Christ, or whether or not you will be dominated in hell by the demons and the devils for whom it was prepared. So when the Lord comes, he'll check the stewardship. And the one who is proven faithful will be rewarded with eternal ruling. Verse 48, but, and if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall begin to smite his fellow servants and eat and drink with the drunkards, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him and in an hour that he is not aware of, and shall cut him in half, and appoint him his portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. On the other hand, when the Lord comes, he's going to find some who weren't faithful, Some who, not being faithful over little, can't be made Lord over much. Some whose lamps were not trimmed in the terms that we'll see in chapter 25. Some who didn't take their talent and use it, but buried it and hoarded it. And they'll be cast into a place of weeping and gnashing of teeth. The evil one, it says there, doesn't it? The evil servant, kakos, evil in quality, evil in nature, says in his own heart, my Lord delays his coming. He won't be here for a while. I'm watching the signs. And you know there are going to be people like that. They say, well, look, okay, I got all this prophetic stuff laid out. As I see the signs going along, I'll just wait till the last moment. And in the meantime, I'm not going to use what I've got for others. I'm going to feed myself. And if the others get in the way and try to take any of what I've got, I'll hit them. I'll smite them. And I'm going to have my fun, and I'm going to eat and drink with the drunks. I'm going to be a good time Charlie. I'm going to party it up. I'm going to grab all the gusto I can get. I'm going to live the worldly lifestyle. It's not that everybody who's unregenerate lives like that. Not everybody who's unregenerate beats other people up or abuses other people to the degree that this servant did. Not everybody that's unregenerate parties with drunkards, but he's an illustration of an unregenerate person. And that's why it says he will be given a portion with the hypocrites, verse 51. It doesn't seem to indicate here that he's much of a hypocrite. I mean, a hypocrite is somebody who pretends to be religious. This guy isn't pretending to be religious, not beating up people and running around with drunks. But he'll go the same place that religious phonies go, which is to say that the category is broader than just this single illustration. It's for all the unregenerate. By the way, Luke, in paralleling this, says he will be cut in half and appointed a portion with the unbelievers. So he's only one illustration of a whole lot of kinds of unbelievers, including not only those who live a drunken, dissolute lifestyle, but those who are religious hypocrites as well. So he thinks he's got all kinds of time. And there are people who say, maybe some listening to me right now are going to say, well, okay, I see. I want what I want. Okay, I'll watch for the rapture. If I miss the rapture, I'm in good shape. I know what's coming. I'll watch for the abomination of desolations when I see that happen. All right, I'm checking through my thing. And then I'm going to watch the unfolding of Revelation 6 to 18. Then when I see the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, since I don't know just exactly what's going to happen after that, I'll try to stay sensitive. And just before I think it's going to happen, I'll just get in there and I'll just take Christ and I'll just make it. And in the meantime, I'll have a great time. Well, the Lord of that servant is going to come in a day, verse 50 says, when you're not looking for him, and an hour you're not even aware of. Don't try it. What makes you think if you won't give your heart to Jesus Christ now, you're going to want to do it in the future? Christ isn't going to change. He will be no more wonderful, no more glorious. He'll have no more power to save, no more power to change your life then than he does now. If you don't want it now, why would you want it then? If you don't want Jesus Christ now, when sin is to some extent restrained, and it's hard to imagine, but it is, do you think you'll want him more in a period when sin is unrestrained and your evil can run amok to the degree that it's never in the history of man run amok? The world will be worse than it's ever been. You think you're gratified by your lusts now, there will be such lustful gratification in the tribulation that it's indescribable. Why will you want Christ in the midst of that more than you want him now? And don't you fool yourself in thinking you're able to read the signs. The Bible says nobody is able to do that. And Jesus is going to come when you don't think he's going to come, in an hour you're not even aware of. And there may have been a lot of folks in Noah's day who said, well, if the water gets up to my knees, I'll bang on the door. Too late. Too late. Too late. And verse 51 says, this is a terrible thing. When the master comes back and finds this unfaithful servant, he cuts him in half. The Greek verb is dichotomeo, dichotomized. It is used in Exodus 29:17 in the Septuagint, which is a Greek translation of the Old Testament, of the sawing in half of an animal when an animal was offered in sacrifice and cut into two pieces. It's to illustrate the serious, devastating deadliness of the judgment of the Lord. When he comes back and finds this person who thought he could sow his wild oats and live it up and do whatever he wanted and slide in under the wire, it's going to be too late. He's going to come when he doesn't expect it, and he's going to pay with a very severe price. The man's going to be cut in half, given a portion with all the rest of the unbelievers and hypocrites, and spend the rest of eternity weeping and gnashing his teeth. By the way, weeping and gnashing of teeth is mentioned 5 times at least in the book of Matthew, and each time is a way to describe the terrible, unrelieved, unconsolable pain of eternal hell. So what is to be the right kind of preparation for an unexpected and sudden coming of Christ? Alertness, readiness, and faithfulness. We need to be watching for the signs. We need to get ready for His coming. And to do that, we need to be faithful to His command and His word and the stewardship He's given us. Now listen carefully as we conclude. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 2. I want to read this to you. For yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. That is to say, suddenly and unexpectedly. It's emphasized again. For when, verse 3, they shall say, peace and safety, just when men think everything is okay, just when they think they're going to make it and they're going to survive, then sudden destruction comes on them like travail on a woman with child. And there are those birth pains again. And they shall not escape. So there are going to be those people who say, oh, peace and safety, it's all going to work out, everything is going to be fine, and suddenly the devastation and destruction is going to fall upon them. And some of those people who think they can survive the great tribulation are going to find themselves facing God before Christ comes through death and devastation and disaster that occurs in that time period. And so Paul says, you, brethren, are not in darkness, that that day should overtake you as a thief. You are sons of light. That day is not going to overtake us. That day is not going to take us captive. We're not people in the darkness. I don't believe we'll ever go into that tribulation. I believe we'll be taken out. We're not children of the darkness. We're not sons of the darkness. We're sons of the day. We're children of light. And I believe the Lord takes us before that darkness breaks loose. I don't have any desire to go through that period. It's infinitely worse than any description in the Bible could conjure up in our imaginations. There's no sense in having a silly preoccupation with wanting to see the tribulation. We want to see Jesus Christ. Why would I want to be in an Antichrist rule when I can be in the presence of Christ at the marriage supper of the Lamb? And I believe that we're not the children of the darkness. The Lord will take us out because our hearts are ready. But for the rest of the world, they're going to say, oh, it'll all work out, peace and safety, and then sudden destruction when they least expect it. I hope you're ready. William Barclay records the interesting story of 3 apprentice demons who came before Satan. And he sent them to the earth to do their apprenticeship. And the first apprentice demon said, I will tell people there is no God. And Satan said, it won't work. They know better. And the second apprentice demon said, I will tell people there is no hell. And Satan said, it won't work. They know better. And the third demon said, I will tell people there is no hurry. There is no hurry. And Satan said, you will gain many souls. There is a hurry. There is a hurry. Listen to what Paul said. Knowing the time, that now it is high time to awake out of sleep. For now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Today we're closer to the second coming than we have ever been in human history. The night is far spent. The day is at hand. Let us therefore cast off the works of darkness and let us put on the armor of light.
This is Grace to You with John MacArthur. Thanks for being with us. John is Chancellor of the Masters University and Seminary, and his current study is titled, Jesus is Coming. Now, John, today we wrap up this study of the second coming, and it's been a great, exciting study. You've stressed several times in our talks that Scripture is clear in what it tells us about the second coming, and yet there is still quite a lot that's shrouded in mystery about the future. We don't know the timing of Christ's return, for example, and other things that maybe we wish we knew, but we don't. So how do you walk that tightrope between what's clear and you need to know and what's mysterious and you really don't need to probe into?
Well, I think Peter summed it up when he said, the prophets looked into what they wrote to see what person and what time. So the two things we don't know is the person and the time. And Jesus said that, right? You don't know the day or the hour. He didn't know the day or the hour. And he told the disciples, it's not for you to know the times and the seasons the Father has in his power. So there's two things we don't know. We don't know the time, and the prophets didn't know the person. They couldn't have anticipated who the Messiah would actually be until he showed up. Look, Revelation is not a sketch. Revelation is not like a little outline that's 2 pages long. It's going to kind of go this way. It is 22 chapters of minute detail about the end times. The details are there for us to understand. And I've said this all through the series. It is disturbing to me that people don't make the effort to see what the Lord has revealed in the book of Revelation in these details, as well as what we've studied in Matthew chapter 24, because the Lord has given these details to encourage us and to put his glory on display and to let us know that the devil loses and Christ wins, and what is ahead has already been predetermined by the purposes of God, and also so that we, knowing these things, can warn the world of what is to come, and also we can rejoice in the coming king and his kingdom and know that actually we are going to be a part of that kingdom. This series has been really important for us and for you as well. It's available on 9 CDs you can order from Grace to You, or you can download MP3s for the whole series. And transcripts are also available on the website. And if you didn't get the order in on the book, The Second Coming, do that as well today.
Right, and both of these resources will fine-tune your thinking about the end times. To order the audio series called Jesus is Coming, or the book titled The Second Coming, contact us today. Jesus is Coming is available in a 9-CD album, or you can download the messages now for free at gty.org. And remember, John's book on the topic of Christ's return, again, it's called The Second Coming. To place your order now, call 800-55-GRACE or go to our website at gty.org. Also, friend, thank you for your partnership. From day one, Grace to You has been supported by listeners like you, people who have benefited from the teaching that you hear on Grace to You and who just want to help others benefit as well. Supporting your church comes first, of course. But as you are led and able to support Grace to You, just know that you will help make an eternal difference in people's lives. You can make a donation at gty.org or call us at 800-55-GRACE. That's 800-55-GRACE. And now for John MacArthur, I'm Phil Johnson, reminding you to watch Grace to You television on Sunday. Check your local listings. Then be here when John launches a series on the greatest news of all time, the gospel of Jesus Christ. Don't miss the next 30 minutes of Unleashing God's Truth, one verse at a time, on Monday's Grace to You.